Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than two decades of experience with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome in to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I am joined on the eve of the draft by one Mr. Thor Nystrom from Fantasy Pros. We are going to be running through the 2024 NFL draft from a fantasy football perspective. We've done it with a lot of fantasy football nerds, but Thor lives this and breathes this 365 days a year. He knows these dudes as good as anyone. Thor, how are we doing, buddy?
Awesome to be with you. Yeah, it's football Christmas Eve's Eve, I guess, right now as we speak. And we are moving in on 48 hours till Goodell steps to the podium. So it is go time. The rumors, this class, this draft in particular, you're going to have those trades in the top 10 because of the quarterback situation that we got going on. And the rumors around those, which, I'm coming to you live from Minneapolis, that has been the talk of town now for 2 months. But those rumors are really heating up here as we move in on 48 hours until the draft bell opens. So very exciting time, and excited to be with you, Davis.
Super exciting times. I think this might be, in my lifetime as a professional in the football, fantasy space, whatever, I have a sense that this is going to end up being the one that has the most chaos on the first night of the draft, where, all the mock draft competitions and everything, it's going to end up getting very screwy. I don't think you're going to need to get very many picks right in the first round to win these contests, because it is my assumption that one of either the Patriots or the Arizona Cardinals or the Los Angeles Chargers at 3, 4, and 5, one of those two teams is going to do something really squirrely that has not been reported, that has not been speculated. I don't know who's going to do it. I don't know what's going to happen, but that is my gut feeling.
1,000%. Yeah. I mean, you have all these teams have multiple scenarios going on of if this guy's here, maybe we're more incentivized to stay in our slot. If, otherwise we have already engaged with these teams that are looking to move up. We have sort of an idea of what the price point is with where we sit on that right now. And then you have the 10 minutes where you're on the clock and you have to make that finalized decision. So I totally agree with that. And I also agree with your thing of this could be one of the lesser predictive drafts we have because of all that movement and some of the different things that could flower off of that. So I had to write a little note when he said that, remind myself to turn my mock into huddle report, so at least I can be humbled on the back end of this. I have no illusions that I'm going to be finishing anywhere near the top, but I should at least take my medicine on the back end when my own exercise gets shot to hell along with everybody else's on Thursday night.
Correct. You got to do it. You got to submit. I've done it. The best year I ever did was the Daniel Jones draft year for the Giants. No one was willing to believe that Gettleman would actually do it. I knew in my heart of hearts that Gettleman would actually do it. So I want to start here at pick two. We all know that Caleb Williams is going to be a Bear. The new thing that has been reported in the last 48 hours is that your boy, one Mr. J.J. McCarthy, now might actually be an available selection for the Washington Commanders at pick two. Got to be honest, I don't believe it. My thought process the entire time has not even been that Jaden Daniels is going to be the second pick, but that Drake May is going to be the second pick for the Commanders. So I guess I'll throw it to you here. You're on the clock for the Washington Commanders at pick two. Who are you taking?
So I've had a different read on that one from the get. I just pulled it up a Twitter thread on February 21st where I said Drake May should not be favored to go number two overall, in my humble opinion, a brief thread. And I got into it. This is back when Drake May was minus 150 to go second overall. And my supposition basically was that Jaden Daniels should be the favorite and that the real dark horse was J.J. McCarthy. And at that time, I think he was 22-1 to go on that side or 24-1 or, you know, something like that. And basically my I'm a little bit lower on Drake May than others. He's my QB4. I do have him like number eight overall on my board. So it's not like, you know, like I would argue till I was blue in the face with him going right. Number two. It's more that I think the fits for Cliff Kingsbury's system are better with Jaden Daniels and the dark horse guy, McCarthy. You look back at Cliff Kingsbury's history, he's had 9 starting quarterbacks since he was offensive coordinator at Texas A&M and Houston, going back all the way then through his time at Texas Tech, of course, with the Cardinals. And then last year when he chose to leave money on the table so he could coach Caleb Williams at USC, 6 of the 9 quarterbacks he's had during that time could be described as out of structure, out of the pocket, extend the play type guys. You know, you think of the air raid, a lot of people think, oh, Cliff probably likes those in the pocket type guys. He actually doesn't. The three guys that were not, you could not describe that way, they were guys that got, that he either replaced right away or else he got stuck with. Davis Webb, who does have a great first name, Davis, but he was the one initially, he got pushed out for Patrick Mahomes. And then the other two of the 9, the in-the-pocket guys, were his last two quarterbacks at Texas Tech because Cliff whiffed on the creator guy that he had recruited. Cliff probably would argue to you that because of whiffing on that guy, this guy named Jet Duffy, that's the reason that it ended up going poorly for him at the end of his time at Tech. Anyhow, whole point being, Jaden Daniels and J.J. McCarthy are much better fits for this than Drake May. And J.J. in particular, his special sauce is getting out of the pocket and throwing on the run. 71% and change last year. Accuracy while scrambling for J.J. McCarthy was 72% and change in the aggregate. He barely loses any accuracy whatsoever on the move, keeps his mechanics with him. And then Jaden Daniels, he's not as good at throwing on the run, but that's not really his game, what he does. He's become really good in the pocket. He'll go through his progressions. Obviously, he is very good throwing down the field, which creates a spacing problem for the defense because his other special sauce is, if it's not there for me, I'm going to tuck it, and I'm now out of the pocket and into the second level in an absolute blank, and now you got a problem. So you know, because of those things, and very good now going through the progressions, like I mentioned. So I just think those guys are better fits there. But Washington, to their credit, has leaked out zero information or zero tells, including probably having some fun with us in the media with what they did, bringing in all 4 of the guys on the same day. I thought that was kind of clever. Maybe Jaden Daniels' agent thought it was too cute by half. He obviously did not appreciate it, but Washington has gone to every measure that they could to cover their tracks as to which of the quarterbacks outside of Caleb Williams that they are most interested in.
Which I think, I mean, look, it's pretty smart. You know, it's definitely possible that the Patriots are like, we are going to die if we don't get Drake May or Jaden Daniels. We don't know, right? I think the reporting from inside the Patriots is different now because the front office has changed. So some of the leaks that maybe we would have gotten in years past, we're not getting now. Feels like Robert Kraft is putting his thumb on the scales. I don't particularly know which one of these reporters is close to Kraft. And then you have the element of the Vikings, you know, up there in your neighborhood. They're clearly horny for someone, right? I don't know if it's May. I don't know if it's McCarthy. I actually, talking about scheme, I don't know if Jaden Daniels is as good of a fit for that West Coast scheme that KOC runs. I think it's probably McCarthy that the Vikings want. And I think the thing that makes this draft most interesting particularly from a fantasy perspective, is if it works out like this. If Caleb Williams is a Bear, May is a Commander, Jaden Daniels is a Patriot, and J.J. McCarthy is a Viking, I mean, that makes the league way better in general, because it takes the Patriots from being this dead team to being super exciting. I agree with the overall take that May and Cliff is not a marriage built, you know, it's not perfect. I'm a little bit, I remember we did this a long time ago when Cliff got this job with Arizona, and I was in on it. You were out on it. You were right. I think we've given Cliff a little bit too hard of a time because he's just clearly not fit to be a head coach. I think he probably is a better offensive coordinator than he is a head coach. And then McCarthy to the Vikings, I mean, that's just everything that he is going to be able to do well. The primary concern I have about McCarthy is he's more of a ball of clay than I think the market is treating him. I mean, this is a guy with zero games of 45 dropbacks in college. Caleb Williams completed more passes than McCarthy attempted. Now, to the pro-McCarthy camp, when he was asked, when he was said, when the Michigan scoreline dictated as such, we need you to throw some darts, we need you to score some points, he was able to do so, just not as in the same sample as these other three guys. So that's where I'm at with McCarthy.
Yeah, the thing, how I see J.J. McCarthy is, I think he's more probably ready to play early than you do. You know, what I go back to is, obviously last year, the end of the season, you're playing in a 12 personnel pro style system for Jim Harbaugh, end up winning the national title. And in the last 13 games of that season, he only threw one interception. That was playing this procession of murderers row of defenses. In the aggregate, McCarthy and Michigan played the toughest defenses on average by far. It was number 38 on average. Bo Nix, for instance, was number 80. Him and Oregon played the average defensive strength of 80. And the other four guys would fall somewhere in between those two guys. But you were playing the toughest defenses there in an NFL style system, beating NFL defenders in the high leverage situations, because that offense was hand the ball off on early downs. And then when the defense knew what was coming on the third medium, third and long, that's when they were like, JJ, bail us out. And invariably he always did. He got more of those opportunities than other guys, and he was better in those situations than other guys when the defense knew what was coming. So for those reasons, and having run that pro style system, having done the NFL type concepts and excelling at those, throwing over the middle last year, I think he had the 17th most throws in the FBS down the middle between the hashes, that 10 to 19 yard money zone in the NFL, and was one of the best in the entire nation at that. Drake May is very good at this as well. That's why I think those two guys are the tailor-made fits for KOC's offense, whichever one they can get access to. But between those two different things, I think that you can potentially project JJ early, but it's not necessarily like you would have to, right? Like, the kid just turned 21 when they won right. The national title game. He was 20. He turned 20, like 21st birthday was like a month after that or something. So, you know, it's not necessarily like you would have to, but I think you have that option. Whereas whoever takes Drake May, I would, especially if it's the Patriots, I would strongly advocate that he is there learning early on.
So this is the nightmare scenario, is that I've kind of stuck my neck out for Drake May. I certainly do not claim to be a quarterback guru or anything like that. But just when I watch Drake May, there's just no projection to what he could be in the NFL. Like, you could just see it. I just did a TV spot this morning with Phil Sims, and he was like, yeah, you know, he's rough around the edges. The mechanics are not always perfect. He kind of just trusts his arm and does his thing and trusts that the ball is going to go where it's going to go in his head. But I'm like, I just watch him and I'm like, yeah, that's Justin Herbert. That is, you know, just a big dude with a strong arm. He can move to where he wants in the pocket. And I mean, look, I would be super jazzed if he was a Viking. Pretty excited if he was a Commander. But going into this Patriots system, it's like, okay, you've got no wide receivers. Who even knows what their offensive system is going to be like? This guy Van Pelt has like a very low, minimal track record in the NFL. And I worry that Drake May, if he goes to the Patriots, does become a cautionary tale, you know, a Zach Wilson, a Sam Darnold, where it's like he just never really had a chance.
For sure. Yeah, you know, I would say I think fans out there, this is one thing that they don't realize maybe to the degree that it actually is landing spot for each guy is so important, and particularly at that quarterback situation position. with Drake May, I think it's a little bit more so just initially because Davis, I think we see his ceiling probably pretty similarly. Like I love his arm. I like the playmaking flair that he plays with. That guy's got balls. I'll give that to him. And including, you know, you've seen some of the cutups of when he's running. Like people talk more about it with Daniels, you know, how the Bugs Bunny thing and running around and sometimes he'll get, you know, smoked or whatever. It's like, Jaden, maybe sometimes have a little bit less courage, or maybe slide a little bit. Drake May sort of the same way where he's bouncing around and he doesn't mind like lowering the shoulder. It's like, hey, Drake, you're the face of the franchise. Like maybe be a little bit less tough sometimes, you know, with that sort of stuff. I like all that stuff. There's just the way that I describe it is there's just some weeds in his game right now. And they're not things that are always going to be there. If he gets into the right situation, he just needs the constant gardener that will, for the first year, let's say it's Kevin O'Connell. We're good. Hey, and Josh McConnell. Hey, Drake, we're going to have some late night film sessions this year. Every Tuesday, Thursday night after practice, late night when everyone else leaves, we're going to have a big bowl of popcorn for you. We're getting into the film room and we are going to focus on these very specific parts of your game. And like the first one that I would do is what I know. One thing I noticed about his film was I love his setup right away. He's in the shotgun. You have the field spread, gets the ball. I love how he does the backpedal thing. So he gets a little bit longer to see the entire field. He sees the field very well. I like that. Then in the beats after that, he moves around pretty well as far as with the pass rush coming around in order to manipulate the pocket and the spacing. So he always has that half halo in front of him. So he has a runway to step into when he needs to fire that pill out. That's the stuff that I like. The stuff where I got a little concerned watching his tape is once the pressure starts, the pocket begins to break down, he still has a couple beats where you still could, you know, okay, let's make our decision. Let's square up. Now let's step into the throw. What I noticed was like, he's like, oh boy, the pocket's collapsing. Drake, you got to make a decision. And it's like panic, panic, panic. The decision-making process sped up. And then he would eschew the mechanics as well. He's like, quick. Okay, let's get the ball right out. And sometimes he totally forget the lower half and the wouldn't even square the shoulders, sometimes different stuff like that. That's one where in the film room, you're sitting down with him with your bowl of popcorn. He's wearing his UNC sweats. You know, you have your feet kicked up and you're like, Drake, we're going to run through 20 of these plays like this. And not to you know, call him out to task, but of like in this moment right here, who was your check down guy? And then he points him out on the screen. Okay, you see how he's open? So that could be one plan right there, as opposed to you always want to go downfield. You always want to be aggressive, but maybe this is not situationally this is not the situation for that. Or Drake, look at the guy who's coming down. Could you not have in that moment, did you not have time to step around the outside, get 4 yards the other way and just throw the thing out of bounds? It was second and five. Right. Like you didn't need to throw it up for grabs in the second or third level, whatever it was, just stuff like that. I don't think the coaching, the care has been done with Drake May to this point of like in these moments, very specifically, we want to give you that backup plan. And this is what we want you to keep in mind in those moments, because you have the mechanics, you have all the arm talent that God gives out at birth, you have all exactly. That different stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like we just need to give you that backup plan so that you know what you're going to do in the moment when the bullets are flying.
And, you know, accuracy, the thing you can't really teach, don't have any concern. Actually, I don't really have any concerns about any of these four guys with accuracy. It's mostly, I mean, I think Caleb's pretty much in a room or a tier of his own. Daniels, it's the age thing, the junior season at Arizona State, which is like very well-worn territory. May, it's kind of the hero ball. I'm just, you know, I'm always looking for the 60-yard touchdown. And McCarthy, it's really just the, I would have loved to have seen 200 more throws from him. I don't really have anything negative to say about any of these top four guys, honestly. I guess the last quarterback question is, are you buying or selling the idea that Bo Nix is going to be drafted in the first round as a starting quarterback?
I'm selling it just because even though you do see egregious mistakes at decisions in the first round, I weigh more heavily how egregious this one would be. And so I don't think it
would be
happens.
So bad. And Penix would be equally bad too, I think.
Yeah, at least Penix, you could make the argument just based on the arm talent, right? Like, because the ball just shoots out of his hand. But like Penix, there are... both you have the medical thing, which deserves looking into, and that's sort of a black box.
Four season-ending injuries.
Four in a row, right? And two of them were ACLs, and that's something we can talk about in a second, because I actually, sometimes I go conspiracy Thor on some of these different things. I actually have a theory about Michael Penix and some of these different things. But you had that, and then the way he throws, it's very unique, where it's just all the upper body action. And what he doesn't use his lower half, you know, like some of these guys, they really drive off, they step into it and they drive. Penix isn't like that. However, he needs the underneath him, he needs the legs set. When his feet are moving at all, the non-repeatable super upper body movement, heavy, that all the action that's going on there, when he's moving his feet at all, it becomes too much. Right. Like, and then the accuracy and the placement just starts to depreciate the more and more he's moving. But the theory that I have about Michael Penix, people were stunned when he went to his pro day and he ran the 40 that
ran
he did.
Ran the 4.5. Yeah.
4.5 and showed the other tests he did, showed this athleticism that sort of harkened back to the beginning of his college career. I think some people forgot he came into Indiana
as a runner,
true dual threat quarterback. Yes, and you saw that at the beginning of his career, he was making plays out of the pocket as the, you know, that sort of a guy. The one that I remember always is when they upset Penn State during the COVID season, and Penix gets out and then he has to run, he has to reach over the pylon with the ball and everything like that, and it was really cool. But then he goes to Washington, you never seen him run again. And so that's why people were so surprised when he goes and he tests as well as he did. Here's my theory. Kalen DeBoer was also with him at Indiana. He was the offensive coordinator for Tom Allen. And Kalen DeBoer really is the reason why Indiana shot up for those couple of years. And Tom Allen got an unjustified contract extension from Indiana. But nobody knows Michael Penix's game and the capability of his skill set better than Kalen DeBoer. He was with him right from the get. And so when he gets him then at Washington, it's pretty curious all of a sudden that Michael Penix is no longer running, even though he gave a lot of utility as the runner at Indiana. And then he later proved at the pro day that he still has that athleticism. My theory is that Kalen DeBoer told him when Penix comes over to Washington with him these last couple of years, that DeBoer told him right from the get, you no longer leave the pocket because we cannot afford for you to get injured again.
Their offense looked like in 2022 with the what's Jake Westberg, the other quarterback that was there. He was really bad.
At Washington, Browning?
Yes,
Yeah. I was thinking, you started to do the hyphenate. I was thinking Westbrook Akina, he was the guy from Indiana, the receiver position.
Yes, so
I was
like, yeah.
Yeah. But like, you know, you had that thing of trying to retain that. And then you also had the thing of DeBoer is well acquainted with that quirk of Penix's game of, he is, the accuracy plays so much more up when his feet are set. It's like a sniper right at the top of the building. When he's just there and he just gets to sit there for 5 minutes and puts, you know, whatever, and he doesn't have to move at all, he's going to be accurate as hell. All the way down, you know, 500 yards out, 1,000 yards out, whatever. But when you are now, you know, frazzling the sniper and you're pushing him off his spot, now he has to run. You're like, now take your shot. Think about what it does to the accuracy. And it's the same thing with Michael Penix. I think the athleticism, sure, it was cool that he showed that. Throw that out of his eval. It is not going to be used in the NFL because it's the same equation that Kalen DeBoer had. If you run him, we have seen this over and over again in his career. Penix will get hurt if you do that, and he can't throw on the run either.
I mean, look, I can't buy Nix or Penix as a first round quarterback. You know, we've got this information coming out. Oh, they're all going to be first round picks. The Broncos are going to take Nix at 12. The Raiders are going to take Penix at 13. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Whatever, I'll eat it. I'm not buying it. I think this class is too filled with defensive linemen, offensive linemen, cornerbacks, and the next group we're about to talk about, the wide receivers, to take. You know, what would either of these guys' ceilings be? Like a peak Derek Carr season, maybe, you know, 7.2 YPA, 28 touchdowns, 9 picks or something is like the best you can do. It's just, there's just no point. I just don't see it.
Yeah, to me, the comp I don't like for Penix is Tua. I feel like that just happens because they're both
lefty.
Which I, you know, like I was trying to come up with the lefty one for Penix. It just had all kinds of problems getting there. I don't know that there is a good one with that. So what I had to settle with was lefty Geno Smith. I see a lot of similarities between Geno and Penix. It's just you have to flip the mirror. And right. And Geno, of course, very, very productive at West Virginia. He had juice in that arm. He also liked the field spread, you know, very similar as far as that goes. When the circumstances around Geno were good, that's when you've seen the numbers play up with him. When the circumstances were not as good, for instance, like his first situation in the NFL, Geno was not quite as good. And that's going to be the same thing with Michael Penix. If Michael Penix gets a really good offensive line in front of him like he had last season, when he doesn't have to worry about the pressure as much, getting pushed off the spot, and then he has a good receiving core that can help him out with that, I think that's where everything plays up with him. And you might get seasons like you've had with Geno, a couple of these different seasons. When the circumstance is the other way, that's where I think it goes down with him. With Bo Nix, I think the analogous guy currently in the NFL, it would be Kenny Pickett. I think it's similar in terms of Kenny Pickett got drafted in the first round simply because the last year at Pittsburgh,
there was no one else.
Yes. So that's number one. Number two, the last year at Pittsburgh, they played this crappy schedule. Number three, they had a very clever offensive coordinator that last year that the entire foot of the offense began with spreading the field out and then forcing the defense to come up and defend these all these screen passes on the outside. And then what they did in that offense was then they would level it out to the three guys on the left. Then they would start going out to the intermediate once you had to bring up the guys, because they would just keep stealing 4, 5, 6 free yards every single play with the quick screen out. You have the two blockers out there in front. And of course, one of those three guys was a first round route running off of Doncio and Jordan Addison, who ended up winning the Biletnikoff. And then they would start going deep when you really were bringing the resources up. So they started getting one-on-one shots, all of which were denoted to Kenny Pickett prior to the snap. This is the same thing that we see with Bo Nix. Bo Nix doesn't make any decisions after the snap. He doesn't read defenses like that. All the decisions were given to him in the Oregon system based on numbers. How many numbers were on this side of the field? How many numbers were on that side of the field? Where are my guys? And he's good at that. I will say that there is some fun stuff on his tape where he realizes the defense has way too many resources on one side. And let's say they're in man coverage. There was one play they were playing Utah last year. I'll give him a compliment because I'm going to crap on him the rest of the time. They're playing Utah. Utah only has one high safety. It was a weird look to begin with. For some reason, this one high safety comes down to the right. I watched this play like 8 times trying to explain to myself why he did it. I couldn't. And Nix realizes that they're in man coverage. Then he realizes who is going to cover my running back, who is lined up to the right of him. So you see Nix goes into like this conniption fit. So he runs up to the offensive line. No, we're switching the play. We're switching the play. We're switching the play. Because he realizes all the running back needs to do is run straight at the goal line. He just needs to lollipop the ball. It's a free touchdown. There ain't no one back there. Literally no one is back in defense for Utah, and no one in this concept is going to pick up the running back. So he gets it with the offensive line. Then he tells the running back, like literally just whispers in his ear, line up to the left of me, not the right, and you're going to run just straight down the field, and I'm going to throw you the ball. No one will be within 20 yards of you. That's exactly what happened, and it was a free touchdown. So that stuff I will compliment Bo Nix on. Unfortunately, it is that skill is not as translatable from college to the NFL.
Not
going to
have very many of those layups available,
no.
Right?
You know, the other thing that you saw more consistently was Bo Nix, on the few occasions when he would go down the field, again, pre-delaying and stuff, you saw him miss wide-open guys all the time because he locks onto the pre-delineated read, and he's just waiting for that guy to get a step, and then that's when he'll do his risk-averse throw, but you would see guys streaking on the other side of the field like, Bo, Bo, Bo. But like he doesn't look over there. It's just where the thing is. So, and you've seen this throughout his career at Auburn. This is why he struggled, because he had to make decisions after the snap, and he had to beat defenses down the field. You see Javon Baker, you know, when we talk about him from UCF, he's coming from the Gus Malzahn offense. The ADOT is so elevated with him. You have to do that stuff in the Gus Malzahn system, and you have to go through your progression sometimes. Bo Nix really struggles with that, and with the pass rush coming around and making these decisions as well. I do not see anything translatable to the NFL. People are like, Thor, why are you a hater ranking Bo Nix as like a late third round pick? I actually think I'm being, relatively... fair with that. I don't think it's hating at all.
No, I don't think it is. All right, let's move now to the wide receivers. We don't need to spend too much time on Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze. These guys are going to be really good NFL players. They're going to go very high in the NFL draft. You're really going to like them for fantasy football, regardless of where they land. Marvin Harrison, great fit with Kyler. Neighbors. I mean, look, if he's a Giant, he's a Giant. You live with it. If he gets 30% of their passes, it's going to be fine. My fan fiction is that the Bears just say, fuck it, and take Rome at 9. And they just say, we are going to let Caleb Williams go into the greatest situation a rookie quarterback has ever gone into. But let's talk about Brian Thomas, who, I mean, look, if he had entered in the draft last season, I don't know if he would have been the top 100 pick. In fact, I think he probably would not have. He has this incredible breakout season, scores more touchdowns than Neighbors. Obviously, it did come in the middle of Jaden Daniels's, Heisman season. Now, Neighbors was definitely more productive on scheme stuff, a lot of screens, a lot of stuff over the middle where it's about getting the ball in space. Thomas was like elite down the field. I would say he's the only prospect where I can start to look at any kind of warts, which is just all the production came in the final year. What is your overall take on Brian Thomas?
Yeah, I think with Brian Thomas, the fair thing to nitpick or at least ask questions about is you mentioned the 1 year breakout, and then it was so dependent on the usage of downfield. You know, I'm smiling because Matt Harmon, he does such a good job with reception perception and yes. Getting into the weeds with the charting of what route they're running. And with Thomas, you will never see a guy who is skewed more to three routes. He was awesome at it last year. He was absolutely awesome because his special sauce, it went right into what Jaden Daniels' special sauce is, that thing I talk about throwing down the field. And then, I talk about how Jaden Daniels is a spacing problem for the opposing defensive coordinator. You have to keep someone deep. But then on that team, you can't spy Daniels as well then. But on that team, you also have Malik Neighbors. And so it was like, what do you do? And so Thomas would get the advantageous one-on-one looks sometimes downtown. Well, Jaden Daniels throwing to that guy downtown. The guy is 6'3", 209 with 4'3 wheels, 98th percentile athleticism. SEC defensive back or not, you're dead to rights at that point. And that's what ended up happening. The way that I see Brian Thomas is I think you get the floor of the pop, the prototypical pop, the top wide receiver two on the boundary where the other team has to keep the second safety up high. You have to respect that. It helps the spacing for the other guys in your offense. But you do have some potential. I'm not going to say that I know that he has this ceiling because we haven't seen it, right? Like we didn't get to see him do the in-breaking and out-breaking and the route running nuance. It was just Brian scream off the line and then you're moving north-south and you're going to trump card your athleticism on people that cannot deal with it. And we have a quarterback that can take advantage of that every single time. So I don't know if he can beat the NFL defenders in the other stuff, the intermediate stuff with nuance, with route running acumen, total black box. We have no idea. We haven't seen that yet, but we know that he could do the other stuff for sure. And we know that he has the athletic traits and we know that he's young. So my sort of take on him is at minimum, you have your wide receiver too, for as long as Brian Thomas is on your team that can make the plays down the field and will scare the defense with that. And maybe there is upside for the wide receiver one. You just have to see when you bring him in. The other contextual thing that I'll give him, sometimes you see these one-year breakout guys and then they go in and it's like, oh, well, you know, it's more like, is this guy like a fluke? The thing I'll say about Thomas, when he went to LSU, he was a ballyhooed recruit coming out and he went into a very crowded receiver room that had Kayshon Boutte, Trey Palmer, Neighbors had come in at the same time as him. There's a couple of Dre Jenkins. There's a couple other like ancillary NFL receivers. I'm probably missing a name or two.
There is one more whose name I can't remember right now.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember who the other dude was. But anyhow, the whole point being, despite that, as a true freshman, Thomas did start. It was something like 8 or 9 games, and it was something similar the next year too. So he actually did get on the field. It was just the other dudes were drawing the targets initially, but he did show, you know, in the at least the athletic traits in sort of forcing his way onto the field initially. You did have the rawness, and I'm sure that that's why they weren't throwing him the ball as much those first couple of years, but they found the usage for him this past season in an advantageous situation, obviously blew up. So he is an interesting prospect.
John Trey Kirkland is the other guy who is like a practice squad guy and is now the best wide receiver in the UFL. Was the other guy? Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
So that's the trivia there. All right. So then, those first four. I mean, look, some people have Neighbors one, whatever. Not going to engage with that. Some people have Thomas three, whatever. That, not a huge deal. Five. I don't think there's any consensus. AD Mitchell is probably my guy. That is very fraught. You know, there's a real problems with his analytical profile. Brutal yards per route run. You know, like had other NFL guys on his roster, had a transfer, played with the ankle injury his sophomore season. I don't really care about any of that. 5 touchdowns in 5 college football playoff games. He's got a role immediately when he enters the NFL. He's a freak. Like, I think the difference between Mitchell and Worthy is if Worthy goes to, you know, the Panthers or the Saints or just one of these teams that I don't really think would have a plan on how to use a 165-pound wide receiver, we're just going to, like, forget he exists. Who is your number 5 wide receiver?
So I actually have Ladd McConkey ever so slightly above Brian Thomas for wide receiver 4. On my big board, they're separated by 1 or 2 slots, but, like, I love Ladd McConkey. So Ladd McConkey would be my dude there.
Okay, so let's examine that because this is a real difference in trying to min-max the game that you're playing. And the idea of doing a big board is you got to get really good NFL players. I don't think anyone really disbelieves that Ladd is going to be a good NFL player. He can separate. He's got a day one role. You could see him, you know, kind of peak. Ladd McConkey would be like Amon-Ra St. Brown, where he's a slot receiver, but you're like using him out of the backfield. He's your cheat motion guy. He just is kind of always open. The issue from a fantasy football perspective is he's never going to be a guy who gets, I would be surprised if he ever has an ADOT over like 10 in the NFL. He's not, which is not to say that he's not athletic, because he is. He showed up to the combine and was awesome, but you're unlikely to get like a 14 touchdown season out of a guy like Ladd McConkey. So what is it that you envision kind of as his range of outcomes in the NFL?
So I don't see a superstar with Ladd McConkey, but I see someone who is damn near guaranteed to be a really, really damn good number 2 option in the NFL. My comp for him is Jordan Addison, another guy who came out and
played. I like that. I've been using souped up Jacoby Myers as my comp, but Addison might be better.
Yeah. And with Addison, you know, he had played in the slot. He played a boundary in college. With McConkey, he comes from the 12 personnel offense at Georgia and ended up playing damn near 80% of his snaps on the boundary in college because of this, for really dominant teams. You know, 2 of those last 3 ones at Georgia won the college football national title. Last year's would have had a shot for the repeat if they had narrowly lost Alabama in the college football championship. And speaking of like overcoming super crowded receiver rooms, like Ladd McConkey goes to Georgia's like George Pickens and, you know, all those different guys, and obviously AD Mitchell and stuff like that, and was able to force his way up. The yards per route run are absolutely stupid with McConkey. You look at it like, you know, he's sort of like the JJ McCarthy of the receiver prospects, where if you just look at the box score stats, it doesn't flatter him. But when, with the context of last year, he was banged up right from the start of the season coming out of camp. So if you know that he was playing compromised number one, but then also Georgia would take the players out early. Ladd McConkey missed a couple games at the very end of the season too, when they were finally like, it was like down the stretch, he'd been playing through pain all season. So they were getting him ready because they were hoping that they were going to be in the college football playoff when they would greatly need him. But he ends up averaging the 3 point, whatever it was, yards per route run in those circumstances last year. He can, you mentioned the separation, fabulous with that. You look at the last couple of years, 90th plus percentile in separation, percentile PFF, and again, single coverage destroys those guys. It's very difficult to stay on him. We saw this down in Mobile as well. And then he has the juice with the 4.3 speed as well. So intermediate, you can pepper him with targets there. And the defenders, they have to at least be a little bit reticent or keep it in the back of their head that he does have that juice to get downtown. So you just can't sit dead red on all of the different, you know, hide the ball in the cup machinations that he does in the intermediate thing. You're not staying with him anyway. You're not going to guess, like, cause he's just so good with that stuff. And he's such a fluid mover, but he can also, you start sitting dead red on that, trying to jump it, you know, trying to overcompensate. He does have that juice to get the step on you and then get the burners downtown. Certainly he's not going to be, not the foot that his game is led with, but you're absolutely going to see him catch a ton of balls in the NFL.
All right, so then the guys after that, that's sort of the Xavier Worthy, AD Mitchell, Troy Franklin, Keon Coleman, You could put DeVontae Walker in there. There are a lot of guys who are very good, and the NFL is so thirsty for wide receivers now that, like, you know, a lot of these guys are going to go very high, top 60 picks. Do you have a particular favorite amongst this group, or a dude you are way lower than consensus on?
Yeah, and the NFL certainly is going to get some for that thirst. They're going to be satiated with this class. I think I had 11 of my top 50 prospects on my 500 player board were wide receivers, and I think extended to 60, 65, then it becomes 13. So that's why if you have a second round, you know, first or second round, or very top of the third, I would strongly advocate a team to think very hard about considering shooting that towards the wide receiver position in this draft, because it is such a stat class through at least there. I also think it's deep later on with interesting guys, but they're the first 13, 11, 12, 13 guys, depending on how you see that. Very attractive prospects there. The guys that I prefer out of that next grouping, huge fan of Ricky Pearsall. I compare him to Adam Thielen. I like Xavier Worthy. There's the thing that he needs to clean up. It's a little bit of the ball skills thing. I see a little bit too many easy flubs with him. I will say they threw him the ball so much. Quinn Ewers loved him. It was just pepper target. You know, we talk about like AD Mitchell didn't get as many targets because they kept throwing to Worthy every freaking play. I think it will help out Worthy going to the NFL, because it's not like, oh, Xavier, you just got off the bus, so we're targeting you. You know, like all the way to the locker room, we're just going to keep targeting you. When he goes to the NFL, being a second, third option in a passing offense, I think that's really going to help with that. And then we work on your technique with that. I don't think he's ever going to have the best hands in the world, but he might have the best speed in the world, and he's a better route runner than people give him credit for, in addition to that. So we just need a little bit of a cleanup with that. The other guys behind that, Troy Franklin, I like him. I think the game ends up translating, at least as far as the volume of catch he's going to do. He's going to be a very efficient player, can give you some downtown utility. And then I'm probably a bigger Roman Wilson guy than some others. He's just really hard to stay with. And he also, for a guy who's as small as he is, he's just shade under 5'11", 185, absolutely can win downtown. So he can do that stuff. We've seen that a whole bunch. And you see guys in the class who have like strange genetic quirks. Roman Wilson is one of those guys where he's like a tiny dude, but has enormous hands. And you don't see him drop the ball at all, so I feel like that's topical. He's like the, you know, Olu Fushanu, the Penn State guy. I got a yes. big kick out of the Bob McGinn piece. You know, he puts out the annual thing where he just lets the scouts, you know, gossip like girls in the high school cafeteria about all the different prospects. And so they just say all this stuff. Well, in the Fushanu one, they were all just fixated on how Fushanu had tiny hands in this enormous frame, and they just couldn't believe it. Like I think Fushanu has the smallest hands for a guy, for an offensive tackle who is 6'6" or taller, that had the arm length that he did. Basically, Roman Wilson is the inverse. He's just this super duper tiny guy that has these friggin' enormous hands. Like, you just switch the hands on those guys and it becomes becomes more like to scale, I guess. So he'd be another guy I'd toss out. Keon Coleman, I'm in the middle on. People argue the one way, people argue the other way. I'm sort of in the middle where I could see either outcome, because you see that dude go in the second round every single year. Sometimes it works out really well. I'm talking about like the contested catch downfield guy who does not create a bunch of separation, but has really, really good ball skills.
No interest. No interest in Keon.
Yeah.
Coleman, I mean, if you could get him at pick 94 or whatever, and it's like, if it works out, great. You know, he's got the tools, but I just feels like that's not going to happen. It feels like the context of where wide receivers have to be picked in the draft is so different now, because if you want to get one in free agency, you're paying them. I mean, Calvin Ridley's 29 years old, came back from a suspension, wasn't very good, and got $96 million. You know, Christian Kirk is signed to, I believe it's still the 11th highest paid wide receiver in the NFL, or you have to trade for one. So a first round pick to trade for one, and then you have to pay him. So like the value of hitting on a Keon Coleman is huge. If it does, you know, if he turns out to be Alshon Jeffrey or whatever, then a huge win. But like Coleman, I mean, I would definitely rather have Coleman than like Xavier Legette. Like Xavier Legette, like legit I mean, if he was forced to declare after last year, I mean, he wouldn't have been drafted, you know, and then he has this crazy fifth year production. I'm much more on, I like both the ancillary Washington receivers, Polk and McMillan. McMillan, I'm particularly high on. He's just got an immediate role in the NFL. He actually scored more fantasy points in the Washington offense in 2022 than Adunze did. And the scouts seem to love Polk. I'm pretty in on both of those guys.
Dude, I love it. So last year, last spring, I was arguing with people all spring about how they come into the process forwarding Jalin Hyatt as this first round guy. And then no one wanted to talk about Cedric Tillman. He was like this mid round afterthought during the process. And so I had this argument of Cedric Tillman is the better player and the better prospect than Jalin Hyatt. And the only reason that you guys think different is because Cedric Tillman got injured in September, which opened up the opportunity for Jalin Hyatt to rip up a bunch of crappy defenses. And also he got DeMarco Helms with a free release when they played the Alabama team. So he got some long touchdowns in that one. It's the same thing this year with Jalen McMillan, Jalen Polk. It's literally the exact same thing. It's like looking in a mirror. In September, Jalen McMillan gets injured, which opens up the possibility for Jalen Polk to assume the wide receiver two role in that that offense for the next five games. Jalen Polk explodes for 100-plus yard games. The crazy thing, though, is down the stretch when it actually mattered, because Washington, of course, was in the run for the – they were going to the national title game, and they were playing the better defenses. In those games, that and McMillan had come back for the last couple – Jalen Polk puts up, so these are the last five games of, the last seven games of last season for Jalen Polk, a combined receiving line of 23 catches for 323 yards and two touchdowns. So that's what they're working back McMillan back into the offense. Two of those games, Polk was healthy and active for the entire game and finished with zero catches. The last stat that I'll do to encapsulate this whole thing, there was 20 games over the last two seasons at Washington where Jalen McMillan and Jalen Polk were healthy and active on the same field for all 60 minutes of the game. Okay, 20 in total. Those games, Jalen McMillan, his stats, 124 catches, 1,657 yards, 14 touchdowns. Jalen Polk's stats in those 20 games, 68 catches, 1,210 yards, 9 touchdowns. There was no debate in the Washington room and in their passing offense of who was the wide receiver two on that team when both of those guys were healthy. Jalen Polk has only been propped up because of context and circumstance and the unfortunate injury of his teammate in September.
So yeah, I'm totally with you there. Trying to think of any other, if there's any deep, I do like the Roman Wilson call. Do you have any day three UDFA style wide receiver? Oh, Aeneas Smith, Texas A&M. That's the guy. That's the guy for me. I think he probably gets drafted on day three, probably drafted for special teams. Initially, he was a really good kick and punt returner at Texas A&M. It's kind of as simple as, you know, obviously there's better, more educated analysis than this, but kind of just like when a guy can play and Aeneas Smith can play. So I think if your team takes Aeneas Smith round five, I bet he makes the roster, and I bet he ends up playing more as a rookie than you would expect.
Aeneas Smith has a whole bunch of different skills, you know, returner. He was a running back, a slot receiver. The only question with him is the receiving touches to him have been manufactured so far. And so I'm curious how that will go, but he's a really good mover, and he does have sort of that versatile skill set, and probably going to chip in a little bit of return utility as well. If it doesn't work out for him in the NFL, he is going to be one of those guys who is like the funnest player in the UFL or whatever, because he's going to be able to just destroy people in that. But like, I do see he's absolutely going to get his shot because he can do several different things. The sleeper dude for me, before I always answered Luke McCaffrey, because for some reason people entered the process seeing him as like sixth, seventh round dude or even UDFA. I think more or less people have caught up enough, so maybe he's not seen as a sleeper anymore. So I'll go a little bit deeper. I think probably my favorite sleeper guy then of guys who are like consensus round six, seven UDFA guys now would probably be Jalen Kolker from Holy Cross.
That's deep.
Deep, yeah. So Kolker is 6'1", 208 pounds, 85th percentile athlete. But that all comes from the non-speed stuff. The one thing he lacks, it's the downtown wheels, but very explosive. He jumped out of the building with that. And he can move side to side a little bit as well. I think that he, if he hits the ceiling, is going to be a number two wide receiver possession guy in the NFL. His ball skills jump off the screen. He had some ridiculous catches in college, and he's also extremely reliable. So one of the only guys in this class who's always just spearing the ball outside of his frame. So I love that about him. And like I said, just had some absolutely stupid catches. So I think Jalen Coker gets a little bit slept on.
Yeah, I like that one. All right, let's finish with this. Brock Bowers, the tight end one of the class. A lot of interesting takes online, actually, like last week of like, do you take a tight end in the top 10, top 15? Is Bowers that guy? Is it a red flag that he didn't do any athletic testing? I'm firmly on it is definitely a red flag. He didn't do the testing the same way I thought it was a red flag with Kincaid. I would not have spent a first round pick on Kincaid. Expect Bowers to be better than that. I mean, you know, Bowers was with like 900 NFL guys as a true freshman at Georgia, won a national championship as their leading receiver, different category of player than fifth year senior Kincaid. But you and I both have the same tight end two of the class, Ben Sinnott of Kansas State University, my alma mater. It's a pretty weak tight end class. Don't think he'll be a round two pick, probably round three, where Jatavion Sanders will go to. Really just tell me about his transition from fullback to tight end and if he was kind of natural at that position or not.
Yeah, for sure. And he can be, you can put him in so many, he's another guy that you can move around with Bowers. It's more just the find the way to get him the ball and you can do that. So, but with Sennett, it's the lead blocker from the backfield. You can put him absolutely in line. He was good at that at Kansas State, very good blocker. One of the top guys at that in this class. You can do big slot stuff with him if you like. I would advocate that he is probably more the between the I think he'd be fine in line mostly, and then also the moving around, shift around, do the lead blocking stuff, offset, different stuff like that. And where I like him as the receiver is the over the middle type catching in traffic thing is the thing that I think he is the best at. In that, you know, we talk about the money zone for this with quarterbacks that 10 to 20 yards down the field between the hashes. Ben Sennett is I was about to say a bad word, is a frigging killer in that zone. Like Kansas State would just, excuse me, I have the coughs, would just steal people's lunch money with them in that. So you get sort of the two-way utility with them. Very hard worker, like I said, brings the lunch pail on the rest of this stuff, but he's also attack. Excuse me.
Yeah, I mean, look, he so the thing you would worry about with a guy transitioning from fullback is like, I mean, one, K-State, they're just not ever really going to recruit pass catchers that much. So anyone who showed the ability to do it is going to be allowed to play there. And the sort of the thing you would worry about would be it wouldn't be natural. It wouldn't be smooth. Sure, he could get open because he's a freak. I think he was 9.85 RAS, I think, off the top of my head. He's just a great athlete. Sort of the same concern I have about the other guy that's thrown out as the tight end two of the class, Theo Johnson. That's been reported the last couple of days. Like, and you know, Jatavion Sanders probably has the best production profile of any of them because it came alongside Xavier Worthy and A.D. Mitchell and Jonathan Brooks and Bijan Robinson, and he was, you know, balling out very young in the Big 12. But tight end is just a position where athleticism is so important that I just would rather have a Sinnott, a Theo Johnson than I think Jatavion Sanders at this point.
Yeah, for sure. Sinnott for sure. I would even prefer Eric Gall of Iowa. Talking about the black box as far as the medicals go, if Eric Gall, if I knew that his medicals have been checked out, he actually would have been my tight end too, just a little bit above Sennett, but just because of the sort of the uncertainty with that relative, I chuck myself to tight end two on him. Sanders isn't bad, but the thing people need to keep in mind with him is he is only the big slot guy. He will get absolutely destroyed if you put him in line. And then his receiving utility, he needs to be used in a very specific way. And that's what Steve Sarkisian did that was very clever. his athletic testing profile, you know, he was only the 57th percentile athlete, but what he was very good at was the speed and then the 10-yard split. It was the rest of the stuff where he suffered with that. You see that on his tape. The thing he can do is stretch the seam. And then the other part of his receiving production, it was when Texas would scheme with Worthy and A.D. Mitchell and get the not only the defense's best coverage guys on the other side of the field, but most of their bodies on the other side of the field. And then that's when you would see the intermediate manufactured looks for Jatavion Sanders in these one-on-one situations where Quinn Ewers, you hit him on the hands and he's moving, and then just the slight turn up field, hit the jets. And then he does not break tackles. He is not evasive. If you hit him, he is almost always dead to rights. However, he starts gobbling up the yak yardage really quick in those scenarios. One-on-one, got the step, hit him on the hands, now turn up field. If you don't have someone right there, he can accelerate up and then start gobbling up some of that yak. So if he's used in that same sort of usage specific way by his next team in a good passing offense, that's where his game will play out.
All right. I think that is a good overview, a good last minute primer here for the 2024 class. Thor, how can people stay up with your work after the draft and getting ready for the 2025 draft?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Thor or X at ThorKU. And then we have a live draft show on Fantasy Pros YouTube on Thursday and Friday for day two as well. And yeah, we'll at some point turn our attention to the 2025, you know, after this one's done, although check out afterwards, because doing the I always love doing the UDFA classes, you know, ranking those out and everything like that. So once we polish all that stuff off, then we'll get back into college football, probably put out the two early top 10 quarterbacks, two early top 10 running backs and everything like that on Fantasy Pros this summer.
All right, there we go. Everyone, make sure that you are following Thor on Twitter at ThorKU. Make sure that you're checking out all of his stuff over at Fantasy and Betting Pros, and we'll be back after the draft.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.